Sullo, the ROI guy.
Hi, this is April Morley.
And welcome to the Value Coffee Talk podcast.
This podcast is a service of the Enterprise Value Collective, a community for business value-focused leaders and practitioners, and is sponsored by our value consultancy, Genius Drive.
Our mission is to help accelerate and optimize the value articulation in each of your customer engagements and throughout the customer lifecycle. And we're very pleased to have a special guest with us today, Phil Moritz. He's a go-to-market and growth expert, currently the Global Senior Director of Pre-Sales for a firm that many of you know and use every day, identity firm Okta. Welcome, Phil.
Thank you very much for having me.
Awesome. Phil, tell us a little bit about your role and pre-sales group at Okta.
Yeah, so my role right now is, as by title, Global Senior Director of Pre-Sales. What that really encompasses is both business value and strategic proposal management. Primarily, the largest part of that team is our business value team at Okta. Was the co-founder of that team about 8 years ago. I've grown that now to from about two or three of us on the ground day one when we started, 8 years ago now. I've grown that to about 15 individuals worldwide from Germany to Sydney and all across the United States as well.
And then tell us a little bit about the proposal group and how that kind of fits into this, because that's not a combination that in some companies we've seen it, but tell us how that got to be.
I think primarily we work at the same stage of the customer lifecycle. You know, a lot of things we'll talk about today, I think, is and the best practices in business value and injecting value into, you know, your customer's journey at Okta or with any organization is start early. Start in stage two, start in stage three, get in early. And that's where proposal management and, you know, RFPs, RFXs, RFIs, you know, come into play as well. The other part of that is that, you know, in both of our teams, we need to work extraordinarily cross-functionally across the organization. And so we have a lot of fundamental, like, you know, I'd say similarities between our go-to-market motions of those, you know, both the business value team and the request for, you know, or the proposal management team. So fundamentally, there are a lot of similarities there where we play with the customer, what time we play, when we play with the customer, and when we face them. And then also, you know, some of obviously, so whenever you're in an RFI or RFP situation, a lot of it's black boxed. So you have to do a lot of imaginative thinking and presumptive thinking as well. And that occurs as well within business value at times. Perhaps a customer doesn't always already, maybe they haven't signed up to go through a full business value engagement with you. And you need to perhaps illuminate the situation a little bit better by showing them the art of the possible. This is kind of a presumptive situation. This is what things could look like for your organization. What do you think? Yes or no? And if they say no, that's probably the best answer, because that means now you have a chance to, you know, dive a little bit deeper with them and say, hey, you know, let's find out the things that maybe don't resonate with you today, and let's make this specialized and customized for you.
That does make a lot of sense. Whereas if you have to put a proposal together or put information together for a prospect without complete information, that you want to focus on value in that conversation. Of course, the product's important. There's a lot of questions to answer, but wanting to tell that value story from the very first step in the journey. So as you've been developing out these teams, you've taken on responsibility for the strategic proposal team. What has been driving you to reshape your strategy, your team, and your approach?
Yeah, that's interesting. I also want to go back to one other similarity between the two, both business value and mm-hmm. RFX real quick. And that is what I like to call documents of accountability. And so what we do in creating, you know, an RFP, RFI, whatever it is, whatever it may be, whatever flavor of that is, or whatever flavor of business value engagement you are conducting with a customer or prospect, what you're really doing is creating a document accountability for you to revisit during that entire, you know, life cycle or stage or journey with a customer at Okta or any organization. And so that's one big thing that we always even just say to a customer up front. What we're doing here is creating a document of accountability for you to revisit during your entire, you know, journey as a customer with an organization. That's one thing. But yeah, to get back into kind of how we're changing or how we're growing, you know, as the company grows, that means two things. One, your customer base and your install base grows. And two, that means oftentimes for a lot of growing companies, more often than not, that means that the individuals internally are growing. You're getting new people and you're growing your organization by way of, you know, headcount and you know, subject matter expertise, or just broadening the field from the account executive standpoint. So from those two perspectives, I'd say from a from the growth of the company perspective, like with new products, we're always adjusting and always continuing to intake and I would say unpack the new product initiatives that we're rolling out, understand the value of those and provide those to the field, you know, at a timely basis so that everyone can speak to those things. But as the field grows and you know, and the company population grows, it's very important for people who perhaps haven't been exposed to, you know, maybe I would say more disciplined value selling approaches. It's important for you or for us to make sure that those individuals are fully kind of indoctrinated or have the best understanding of what the value is behind value selling. And so there's a lot of that, and that's kind of how we've changed it. Now, from a macroeconomic perspective, so we can take, so those are two things that happen to growth in companies. Now, what happens outside of companies, and I think April, maybe that was what you're referring to with the changing climate today. You know, 8 years ago when we started this practice, and I've, you know, value selling is actually a fairly new, well, in popularity, practice. It's been around for a long time, but it's gained quite a bit of popularity in the last 10 years or so. And so in 2016, you know, when I started with this organization and we started building out the value practice at Okta, value selling, I don't want to say it was easy, but it was different. Like customers loved it. You would go in and you show them like, okay, this is a document that allows you to speak to other stakeholders within your organization. They may not know exactly what, you know, identity access management is and the components of identity access management under that or any technology under that. So you're able to talk to your CFO or CMO or whoever it is in their language. They love that. Well, now they need that. So it's one thing to love something, you know, and so that was from 2016 to, let's say, 2022. And it was something that customers absolutely enjoyed. They said, this is great. This is going to help. I can help. You know, now, thank you for helping speak my language so that I can go make it easier and talk to other, you know, stakeholders in my organization based on the business outcomes that you've outlined here that align to my strategic initiatives. So now I can do this in everyone's language, you know, with numbers for a CFO, with you know, larger ideas and also numbers for a CMO, for instance. But, you know, today you need it. And you really, and it goes back to that document of accountability idea. And it's like setting the standard for like, hey, look, yeah, budgets are getting tighter. You know, the competition exists out there. And with that, you know, we really, more than ever, value is something that matters to customers, again, more than it did in my first, you know, 6 years building this practice out.
Some security organizations, Phil, they deprioritize business value as you indicated. It's kind of a vital element nowadays. What would be your advice to them? Because it definitely was something that was in place pretty early at Okta and pretty, I think, pivotal to Okta's success and growth.
Yeah. You know, that you bring up an interesting thing. It's not just maybe even security organizations. Other organizations have not implemented maybe a value, you know, I'd say GTM value driven approach to their customers. There's a huge gap there. I'd say start early. It's not too late. That would be my first advice. It's not too late to start. And as you start, be sure to be really, really clear about how you gather data. Gather all the data that you possibly can at all times, even data that you don't think is going to be important. I can almost guarantee you that 2 years down the road, you're going to sit there and go like, oh my gosh, I get all these measurables out of this data that I didn't even think was going to be valuable to, you know, our story or to other customers. Now, the difficulty in security is if you only focus on security benefits, there's two things there. One is that there's security fatigue. Go to any conference, any trade show. It doesn't need to be RSA. It can be any conference. And every single SaaS organization out there has a security story with some kind of value, maybe fairly nebulous value drivers attached to it. Mm-hmm. So now customers have a little bit of security fatigue. And so what I encourage any organization to do is get a little bit more specific about not just the reduction in cost of a breach. That's the Ponemon Institute study that many CISOs are familiar with. Not just that, but get a little richer in context about what from a solution standpoint and also business outcome standpoint, what security benefit really means to an organization, whether that be, you know, bot attack or different components of identity threat protection, or, you know, there are a lot of things you can dive into to make your story unique. And that's what I would encourage individuals to do, is look around, see what everyone else is doing. Maybe take the best of those things, but don't follow the herd entirely. And I think that's what we've done uniquely at Okta's business value practice, is not just kind of sit there and say like, oh, that looks good, you know, okay, let's do that. It's we've continued to expand and get richer in our approach to the security story and the rest of our value driving story. As you know, Thomas, you know, IT savings, or whether it's like, you know, IT efficiency, user productivity, driving revenue, and security are, you know, the four key tenets of value at Okta. And I think, again, the security story can be hard, but get creative, get uncomfortable, get comfortable with being uncomfortable, and be creative and persistent. You'll get there.
Yeah, I like what you said about, you know, not just necessarily telling a story of value, because there is security fatigue, but making sure it's a differentiated value and a differentiated story that highlights the real outcomes and impacts that you can uniquely provide to your customers. And you had spoken earlier about, you know, how customers, maybe this was extra credit for them in the past, to provide a business case, to show the justification for it. But now it's a core requirement. And it sounds like, you know, after 8 years building this team out, you're delivering this capability, this differentiated value. So what kind of outcomes are you seeing? What has been the impact?
The impact, I guess, let me dive deeper there. What kind of impact, or I guess, or what kind of outcomes are you kind of referring to? Are you just mean broadly? Well, like whether it's yes or no customers like it?
Yeah, it depends on how you measure it. So, you know, how does your team and organization look at the impact of the work that you're doing?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Well, one, we measure everything relentlessly in our team, you know, in this organization. We did it from day one, so it gives us really rich data over a number of years. And so some of the key KPIs is like, and this is only based on a security story. We are a security company, but, you know, there are other value drivers that are attributed to Okta. And so overall, you know, if you look at, you know, the increase in, you know, value injected into a conversation, kind of four key things we look at. There are about 32 KPIs I look at generally, but four easy ones are, do we increase your ARR on average? Mm-hmm. So do we increase the average ARR of a deal size? So the answer is yes, without giving out too much data there. The answer is yes, and by a significant margin. The average TCV obviously then follows by the ARR. And then I think one of the ones that I like the most is how, what I call the stage two to stage six deal velocity. And that is one that we measure. I mean, really, really, we've done that for a long time. And it's not easy to measure. Not all organizations have maybe even their Salesforce instance set up to be able to do that. But we're able to look across the organization and say, let's say the different t-shirt sizes of business value, where you have like a self-service tool, like a media fly mm-hmm. or something like that, where the field can use. And then, you know, internally, my team, we use big, big models behind the scene. And so that would be a white glove delivery. So that's the large t-shirt size. And in between, you have, you know, customer stories, you have different assets, tools, and collateral that you can use that kind of are in between the white glove delivery of business value and then the field facing kind of self-service delivery. And if you inject any kind of business value, any one of those t-shirt sizes into your deal, the stage two to stage six velocity is, and again, I don't want to give away too many, you know, non-public details here, but it's very considerable. I mean, shockingly large. So I'd say for an organization, it goes back to the last question, for an organization that isn't doing this yet, start tracking what, you know, I say the success of this. By tracking success, you're going to easily enact change and change of behavior within an organization. It's very nice to be able to pull up a slide at the end of each quarter and say, hey, by the way, on a running total, this is actually how well we do and these three or four categories, you know, and win rate is another one, obviously, out of those four, which is what is your overall, you know, win and conversion rate when you inject any t-shirt size mm-hmm. of value into your deals.
Yeah. Phil, when we just finished a research study on this, on the performance impacts, 48% on win rates on average, which we've seen customers get more than that.
Right.
It's a 35% increase in deal size, kind of the total contract value, and then 25% acceleration in sales cycle. And those are averages. So, but I think you're a little bit above average. Yeah, definitely. Definitely understand that.
Okay, without saying anything, I'll just point my pen in the air.
Phil, you and I work together on it, so I know some of the figures there. One of the challenges that we did uncover, though, was, hey, these results are great, but seller adoption is sometimes a big challenge. In fact, adoption on average, and again, I know you're much higher than this, is less than 20%. It's 19% on average. Tell us, first of all, was getting adoption a key element to the success of the Okta program? I would think it was. And then how did you drive that? How did you drive successful adoption?
Yeah, adoption, I always say enablement and adoption, or, you know, adoption or via enablement is a year-round sport. Is it kind of the saying that I go to many meetings with, and it's on everybody as well. So there were global enablement teams at every organization, and they have so much horsepower to do. You know, they're many times they're the delivery vehicle, and they do a darn good job at that. We have a great one here as well, but it is on individual organizations and teams within an organization to step up and take ownership and build the collateral, collaborate with the different groups to make this happen, take ownership of it, and then bring it and collaborate, you know, bring it to other organizations as well. So that's a year-round sport, and it never stops. And you're absolutely right. When we first started this, I was banging on desks and telling everybody how great business value is and how they need to, you know, use self-service tooling or how they could use it. And, you know, adoption went up. And then I'll be completely honest, we saw a little bit of a dip in adoption. When did that happen? That happened during the pandemic, or let's just call it, rather than, you know, overblowing it, let's just call it 2020 to 2022. And we saw a little bit of a decrease in adoption during that time. And why is that? Well, because companies hired a lot. And so I know that our organization is not alone, but companies, I know for a fact, you know, because I've spoken with, you know, again, some other service providers like in this space, and you know, they're seeing the same thing. And why is that? Well, because people were being onboarded in their homes, and, you know, in front of a computer screen rather than in person. And there wasn't, you know, an ability to run actual workshops, you know, and those sorts of have those really in-depth interactions. And so that's a gap. And so what we're doing every year now, 2023, 2024, right now is running in-person workshops with the teams that use these the most and the teams that use them the least, so that they're refresher courses. And again, it's a year-round sport. You have to get your sleeves, you know, rolled up, your shoes dirty, whatever you want to call it, and get in front of your constituency and the, you know, account executives that are going to, you know, realize the most value from this. The way we've done it, what we've changed the most, and to answer another part of that question, is what we've changed the most there is created more of a workshop and simulation training type of environment. So if I can, and it's been highly successful. So instead of just sitting there and having a Zoom, you know, a webcast, or, you know, some sort of webinar, and someone just listening and doing five other things on the screen over here, and just pressing the attendance button, is that we're going into, you know, QBRs, and we're speaking to, you know, we're getting 3-hour slots of time within QBRs. We break people up into groups of two. We run through simulation exercises, give them a business case. Folks in my organization act as the customer, and, you know, the field acts as the field. And so they need to go build out literally a business case live in front of their ASDs, their AVPs, everything. So there's some accountability there too. And do all this live in a 3-hour session. And that's getting a lot of traction, and something new that we're trying that we weren't able to do 2 years ago. So for others out there, I highly recommend it.
Great suggestions, Phil. Those hands-on experiences are really invaluable. So you had shared with us that you have a background in VC investing alongside your go-to-market experience. So I think you have a unique perspective on what it takes to scale an organization. And we're seeing many companies, you know, early or growth stage, take a little bit longer to pivot from product-led to value-centric. And what is your perspective on the right timing and advice for making that transition?
Gosh, you know, it kind of goes back to what we talked about before. That, you know, I often repeat myself, mainly because I use similar frameworks across many other, you know, modalities in business, but early and often. is the best way to do it. Mm-hmm. If you want my frank opinion, I think that the earlier you adopt a value selling mindset or just a value centric mindset, mm-hmm. The better off you are ingraining that into the culture, your go to market culture. That's my first piece of advice. Now, the other thing that I think is super important there is you can say, if you say a word like value centric or value selling to someone new in the field or someone who's been in the field for a long time, it might go in one ear and out the other. But I think it's important to not completely ignore the fact that every field seller has a SKU sheet at the end of the day, right? They have a CPQ, a pricing calculator, if you will. And on that SKU sheet, there are products. So it's important to not completely just ignore the fact that the products exist. And it's really important to be able to map the value, the business outcomes that you have established with an organization and helped uncover by speaking that organization's language to the technical value driving benefits of an organization. And then later on down the road, then be able to map those directly also and easily to the individual SKUs that align to them. And if you don't have, a placemat or a roadmap for individuals to do that, people are going to be lost. And so one of the first things we did and the first things we do is, for instance, if Okta rolls out a new feature or function or product, and we'll just call it product, the first thing is that happened from the product side and engineering. They built this. They weren't going, how do I build value, right? They were going, let me solve a problem. And so then what we do is we take that and we disseminate, we find out what the quantitative and qualitative value is to an organization, what the business outcomes and what strategic initiatives it may align with. We test it with our trusted customers as well, new customers, trusted customers, or prospects. We test it and then, continue to test it. We always test and refine it. But most importantly, we build that entire continuum. So it makes it easy for someone in the field to understand, like, yes, we're not selling based, you're not going to someone and saying, hey, you want some single sign-on? You're saying, hey, how difficult is it for an individual? What is the day in the life of an individual in your organization look like? Ask that question. And the number one most important thing as well, I think in value selling and integrating into the field is we often talk about, in business, three whys. People ask like, why Acme Bread Company? Why now? Why do anything at all? Now, those are three horizontal whys. And the most important thing is to, if you want to really make value selling successful within an organization, one, do it early. And two, I'd say certainly like reinforce that depth is required. Curiosity is required. Customer empathy is required. But what that really gets to is depth. So if someone says, we've got a lot of problems with provisioning. And you take your pencil down and you go, a lot of problems, big problem provisioning. And then you move on to the next question. You're doing yourself and the customer a disservice by not asking how big, what does that mean? Tell me a little bit more about that. Now that's sort of the Toyota model of asking five whys to get to the root of the problem. You normally don't need to do five, to figure out everything, but do three whys, nine box it, do three whys horizontally, three whys vertically, nine box it. And you'll more likely than not be able to come back to your customer and say, hey, look, I heard you had 15 domains or, this many password resets or whatever it is. But you're actually able to read them back the numbers and provide to them, like, again, that document of accountability where you said, I've heard what you said. Mm-hmm. I heard it. I wrote it down and here it is. And we can therefore the value case I give you, they're not my numbers. They're your numbers. Mm-hmm.
Phil, how important is leadership and was leadership vital to your program at Okta? Kind of what are your recommendations to chief revenue officers and other C-level leaders to have the biggest impact on business value success?
Oh, wow. I don't know if I have too much advice for CROs, but we have a close relationship with our CRO, and we always have, actually. Throughout the last 8 years, we've had, I think, three or four CROs, which I don't think is uncommon for a company that, started at, when I was there, started from about 500 people net to about 5,000 individuals net, net today. So that's, a big difference. And there's different CROs for different size companies and different stages of growth. Mm-hmm. My advice to maybe my advice to value teams is become good friends with your CRO. Let them understand, show them examples of your work, show them examples of what you're doing. You know, particularly for those white glove engagements where you're really diving deep with a customer. Let them know that within, for in my case in particular, like within pre-sales, they have a group of strategic advisors, trusted advisors to customers, people that come from a consultative mindset, and that ultimately, like any support function, I mean, it's the cog in the wheel. So the hub of a wheel is the account executive, right? And everybody else is part of the spoke. So you want to let them know the power of some of those spokes. And one of the spokes is, you know, pre-sales, which is a very, very, very valuable support function from both technical and business, you know, function. And so just demonstrating that to those leaders, making yourself visible, allowing them to understand that when you can invite other voices to the room so that there isn't customer AE fatigue. Now you get another individual in there who's a trusted advisor going to help, you know, surface some of the customer's pain points or, you know, strategic initiatives and business outcomes. And I think that's what it is. And to a CRO, I'd say, reach out to your business value team and see what they got. Give them a challenge, see what they can do. And I mean, you've been selling, you know, a long time to, if you're a CRO level right now, you've been selling for a long time. You've seen this happen. There are a lot of different flavors of business value. I've spoken to many, many, and got many consortiums of leading SaaS organizations, and everyone does it slightly differently. I like to think that we're quite sophisticated in what we've built here, but everyone does it a little bit differently. And I think it's important to do that because everyone comes in with a different idea of what value is. And I think I'm always very pleased with what we've built and that people go, whoa, that's, you go that deep. So, you know, we're very happy about that here. So I'd say from both sides, you know, make it, you know, bilateral, get together, get in touch with each other, see what they got. If you're a CRO, challenge them. And if you're a, you know, an individual, you know, in my position or leadership in pre-sales, even if you're a pre-sales leader and you don't have a value team yet, or, you know, a dedicated value team, think through that and think about, yeah, how could this really change our go-to-market?
Yeah, absolutely. And you made some great points around how it really does take the organization to drive adoption. So it comes from all levels of the organization, from your CRO, from your value team leaders, from your field sales leaders. So, you know, it's an organizational initiative to really make this successful. So I love these points, Phil. What is the one piece of advice you'd like to leave the Enterprise Value Collective with today?
You know, I think when speaking to customers, I mean, that's really what we're about, right? Driving value, driving, you know, for any organization, the way we do it. I think that the most successful value teams and value organizations will lead with curiosity. They'll lead with empathy for their customers, genuine curiosity, and they'll lead with being that strategic advisor to an organization. So I would then say, you know, just reiterate, like, record everything, be data nerds, you know. It makes it a lot easier. It goes back to April's question from earlier, like, how do you enact change, right? Or, you know, in an organization? Well, it's really easy to enact change in an organization if you can just show them. Show them what the outcomes of these things are. So having a data driven approach to advocacy is super important. I'd also say, I think on that, like, give your leaders, I consider every member of the team that I work in and around me a leader themselves. And I give them, and I think, or I give them, what I'd like them to have is the agency to, you know, act, to collaborate, to build, you know, and that freedom to, of, you know, of creativity, to, however they like. Use the fundamentals of value in everything you do, but, you know, you have the agency to speak to and interact with anybody to make things work. So never work in silos. Stay creative. I'd say more importantly, stay curious and stay empathetic. I think Steve Jobs once said at the end of a Stanford graduation speech, he said, stay hungry, stay foolish. So maybe mine is stay curious, you know, stay empathetic towards your customers and, you know, be genuine.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us on the Value Coffee Talk podcast, Phil.
All right. Well, thank you very much for having me. Good to see you.
Please sign up for the Enterprise Value Collective LinkedIn GeniusDrive.com website if you haven't done so yet. That'll let you stay in touch with us on the latest events, tools, insights, and research. Some great research on value selling just recently released. And if you like this episode, hit the like button, subscribe so you know when the latest episodes come out. And until next time, our Enterprise Value Collective, keep sharing and growing together.